Welcome to Pop Culture Happy Hour from NPR. I'm Linda Holmes.
And I'm Stephen Thompson.
Stephen, do you remember anything about the summer of 2017?
I do. I remember it was hot, I remember it was humid, and I remember we were watching the first season of Glow on Netflix.
We were. And the two of us and our friend Glenn Weldon were joined by Code Switch's Kat Chow for a conversation about Glow, which has now just released its third season, and we're sharing that 2017 conversation with you today.
We will be back soon with new episodes, but after a break, you'll hear our conversation about Glow.
Support for NPR and the following message come from The RealReal, the leading reseller of authenticated luxury items. Shop luxury clothing, accessories, and fine art at unreal prices. From your favorite designers like Louis Vuitton, Gucci, Cartier, and hundreds more. And The RealReal authenticates each item to ensure it's guaranteed authentic. Shop in-store, on the app, or at TheRealReal.com and receive 20% off select items with promo code REAL.
Welcome back. Back in 1986, a syndicated TV show called Glow, Gorgeous Ladies of Wrestling premiered, and now Netflix is dramatizing, or rather comedifying, the development of that project with its 10-part series, Glow. It stars Alison Brie as a down-on-her-luck actress who dreams of more serious roles, Betty Gilpin as a former soap star taking her first job since having a baby, Marc Maron as the director trying to pull the whole thing together, and a large cast of women who do indeed pull each other's hair. The series was co-created by Liz Flahive and Carly Mensch, who have, between the two of them, worked on Orange is the New Black, Nurse Jackie, and Weeds. When I think comedic shows about wrestling, I think Glenn Weldon. I don't know why.
Yeah.
I have no reason. How did this strike you, buddy?
I like this a lot, and I wasn't anticipating liking it a lot because I have absolutely no interest in the subject matter. Not female wrestling, not wrestling. It's just I'm just not a wrestling guy. I never have been. So it's kind of like Friday Night Lights in that way.
Sure.
I don't care about football, but I like the show. After the first episode, I thought, okay, I get what this is. This is Tootsie with pile drivers, right?
Right.
And I figure that's where the show was going. As the show goes along, I've seen 7 episodes by now, it deepens, it broadens, mm-hmm. and we see more of the cast. That really helps. And in speaking of casting, Alison Brie is somebody that I think if she hasn't been in our topic, people were pulling for,
right.
She should have been. She was honorary in there.
Sure.
It's so good to see her get a role that she can sink her teeth into, that she can actually expand and really live in. But how is it possible that Marc Maron seems more perfectly cast for this role than he does for the IFC show on which he plays himself?
No, it's funny because did you hear the WTF where he was talking to Kumail Nanjiani and Emily Gordon about the Big Sick?
Not yet.
So Maron had them on talking about the Big Sick, and one of the things they were talking about was being a comedian and then doing acting. At this point, he doesn't really feel like he's stretched a whole lot.
Mm-hmm.
And when I watched this, I thought, yeah, I would agree with that. And I agree with you. I think Alison Brie, although she's played sort of comedy on Community and more drama on Mad Men, she's always kind of been a little bit of a delicate flower,
mm-hmm.
I guess
yeah.
I would say, either a funny one or a more dramatic one. And here she's much more... I mean, she is still that in a way, but she's much more kind of frank and weird in a great way.
She's, totally. She's weak more than delicate.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. She's more flawed, I think.
Yeah.
I really liked Alison so far. So I only watched 4 episodes. So I'm curious to see how it unfolds. But I loved how she was able to bring this, like, cringiness to her character,
mm-hmm.
where I've always thought that Alison Brie in her characters, even on, like, Community, for instance, there's this element where the way she acts... It's not like she's overacting, but the character that she plays in Glow really tends to do that, where there's something very theatrical about her
right.
and the performance that she gives in a lot of her characters is like that. And so I thought it really suited her and her expressions. I almost didn't recognize her at first.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they're just so on point.
Yeah. Well, she does have an 80s perm.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And some 80s eyebrows.
And she's serving you a little Shelley Long in Cheers. Mm. That's the persona a little bit.
Oh, interesting.
Just that's a good comparison.
Annoying.
Yeah,
like,
that's solid.
Just a thin thread of annoying, but owns it.
And kind of pretentious, too.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
I think what makes her like Shelley Long in Cheers is she thinks she's better than the situation she's in.
Mm-hmm.
She sort of feels like she's slumming. And part of the show is a little bit like Orange is the New Black, which this show has some
right.
of the same DNA.
Piper,
it's about somebody realizing that they actually belong in the situation they're in more than they think they are.
Interesting. And I do think that they play with the idea that she is She turns out to really be made for this because she does have this, what you would consider overdramatic flair, which if there's a place that you can deploy your overdramatic flair, it's in wrestling. And I don't mean that to be a negative statement at all. It's just that it's a very exaggerated sort of form.
Yeah, that's one of the minor quibbles with the show is that in incorporating the kind of larger-than-life aspects of wrestling, in the cast and in the writing sometimes there's a broadness. It's a little uneven to me. I mean, there's some jokes and some characters who are much bigger, and it takes a while for that sort of rhythm to kind of find itself. Yeah. Tonally, there's a weirdness there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, one thought that I had watching this was I can't wait to see the second season. Mm-hmm. Because a lot of what you're getting as this first season unfolds is you're finding out who these people are.
Right.
And if I had a quibble with it, and ultimately I really love this show, it doesn't have as many jokes as you think it's going to. Mm-hmm. It's not necessarily as dramatic as you think it's going to be. So, like, it's a dramedy that's not necessarily high on comedy or high on drama. What it has in spades is character development.
Yeah.
And that's ultimately what has just pulled me very kind of deeply into this show, is I love the way these characters are finding themselves as the show is finding the characters.
Yeah. How long did it take to grab you, Kat?
I was pretty grabbed in the first episode. I mean, I think there is a twist that happens pretty quickly, I think, within the first two. And it was when I realized that Alison Brie's character, Ruth, was not as perfect or even good of a person as I thought. Because I think often when I watch dramedies like this, it's so easy to just like root for the person because she's not annoying. She's not X or Y or Z. And I realize now that I'm assigning a lot of these traits to a woman character. But there was something that she did that she understood and realized was just bad and just crappy.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's when I started to actually like the show a lot.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
So for me, I liked the kind of line-to-line writing. Mm-hmm. I like the rhythms of it. I think Maron is really funny.
Yeah.
And I read a thing about how he, like, auditioned on his iPhone or something like that. And I was like, he auditioned? Like, this wasn't just written
Mark Maron.
Yeah. But, Mark Maron says.
But I very much enjoyed the characterizations, as Steven said. I enjoy the, you know, that they do lean into the perms and the hair and all that stuff. On a story level, there is a lot of the kind of League of Their Own. Here's all these women who come together. And of course, they don't really know what they're doing. And this man who's all washed up, this is kind of his way of getting back on top, is to kind of get all these women
assemble
this team of women for this ragtag project. And he's sort of the genius who sees where it all needs to go. And as the season goes along, there are a number of story choices that I just thought were not as interesting as I wanted them to be. So for me, it's a story that I was kind of in the opposite position from Steven. I cared about the minute-to-minute writing. I liked the performances. I liked the style of it. But the bigger story and the character stuff, I actually was not as interested in, to be honest. Yeah.
It was fun seeing Chris Lowell back, old Piz from Veronica Mars, as the squirrely, coked up, producer?
Yeah.
Benefactor.
Benefactor.
Yeah.
I mean, playing the James Spader role, the 80s James Spader role, to a T.
Yeah, I think he's slightly more benign than maybe most of your James Spader 80s villains, but I do want to bring up, because, you know, Kat is a member of our team that covers race and ethnicity and culture. I do want to talk a little bit about the fact that I think they are open about the way that wrestling in the 80s, and I honestly, I'm not sure how true it is now, but certainly in this world, a lot of the kind of easy, over-the-top hero-villain stuff was, in some cases, profoundly racist.
Right, right.
And some of it was just, you know, they go straight to, like, there's a black woman who plays welfare queen. There's an Asian woman who's fortune cookie. Like, I wasn't sure how much I felt like the show earned that or dealt with it well.
So when I saw that sort of episode crop up where they started making fun of these stereotypes and trying to really lean into them, there is this point where the character who's the welfare queen says something that felt very on the nose to me, where she says something like, you know, I don't know about this. My son, he goes to Stanford, really emphasizing that he's educated and, you know, he's black.
Yeah.
And I guess It reminded me of Aziz Ansari's Master of None in that episode, Indians on TV. And I kept comparing the two, and I don't know if it's fair to compare the two, but I kept comparing them because Indians on TV is really similar, except it's a person of color who is owning that story and telling that even as the character. And so there was some dynamic that felt off. I mean, I'm open, of course, because I've only watched four episodes. Maybe there are some other characters who are going to crop up who...
Yeah, I mean, they hit it harder later, but I'm not sure if they get there in terms of an analysis.
Yeah.
And one of my beefs with it, one of my concerns about it, was the character who says that she's part Cherokee. It's not just that the way that they eventually create her wrestling persona is racist, but she as a character, she as a real person from this family of quiet giants, that felt off to me anyway. And I don't necessarily know that they're getting there in the right way.
Okay.
I don't know.
See, I'm not sure they aren't. And I mean, one element of the structure that they're clearly setting up is a little bit similar to Orange is the New Black, where you're starting to get that thing where each episode is kind of starting to highlight a different character. I had this reaction to it of like, I can't wait to see where it goes. I can't wait to see season two. Part of the reason for that is I feel like they're bringing more out of each character as the season progresses.
Yeah, it's interesting because it's definitely an element of the wrestling personas, and it's interesting to see how they handle it as part of the actual
very meta
characters.
Yeah, and they also handle something that I haven't seen dealt with on television at all, much less in movies or any kind of medium, which is somebody who identifies as something other than human. That is the first portrayal I think I have ever seen, and it's a relatively sympathetic one.
Yeah.
And surprising in a show that is playing into racial stereotypes in a very meta way.
Right, yeah. I think one of the difficulties of it is, like, whenever you have a cast of 12 or 14 similarly sized characters, right? Like, you know, this is the crew, this is the group. It is really hard to serve all of them,
right?
You know, and so you do wind up with either that structure that Stephen is talking about, where they're individually highlighted for one episode, or you wind up with a situation where you're kind of giving a handful of lines to each of them, you know?
I do think some of them are starting to pop. Even something as simple as Betty Gilpin as the main character's best friend, you know, that was a character who in the beginning is one thing and evolves into another thing. In the beginning, she's just sort of lugging around this weirdly mute baby.
Yeah. I noticed that too.
This baby is this silent prop for the first few episodes, and then they allow that character to have a real transformation.
I like that performance a lot,
but it led me to believe there are a lot of characters on this show that they can do that with, that they have now the raw materials to do
that's
that
a good
with.
Point. Yeah.
If you like this show, you should check out a recent episode of the Paul F. Tompkins podcast, Spontanea Nation, where he has on Alison Brie and several members from this cast, Rebecca Johnson, who plays Dawn, Kimmy Gatewood, who plays Stacy, and Jackie Tone, who plays Melrose. And they just, you know, they tell stories about filming and how much they all just got into it and how there were some injuries, as you might imagine. But they just had this natural, easy chemistry, which I think comes through on screen.
Yeah. How did you feel about actually watching them wrestle?
I just kept thinking about all of the stunts and the stunt people, the stunt woman who probably had to come in and just figure out how to portray these people who don't know how to do it. I thought it was really interesting and fun.
I don't know how much they used stunt folk. I know that they had some training. I know they spent a number of weeks training to wrestle. And the good thing is they don't have to look like good wrestlers.
Right.
They have to look like so-so wrestlers, which I think they do for most of it, even when they're...
Lots of hugging.
Even as they get better. Well, yeah. One thing that I did like about it is I like the way they handle, and I say this as, like Glenn, not a wrestling aficionado, but I do like the portrayal of wrestling in this show in such a way that the whole idea of quote-unquote fake or not fake seems beside the point,
right?
Yeah. It is choreographed in advance, but real in the sense that, like anything else, like dance or anything else that's physical, A, it takes skill, B, it contains risk, and C, you have to work very well with the other person and all of that stuff, and it takes a ton of practice and learning.
Yeah, I mean, they do establish that, like, even if you do it right, it takes a toll. Mm-hmm. It is an athletic pursuit that beats the hell out of you.
Yeah, And I think that's true of a lot of the women who are actually involved in GLOW. I was reading about some of them this morning, and I think that's a complicated story. There's a documentary about it that I am going to watch, haven't watched yet, but this made me curious enough to watch it. And I think there is some complicated history. It was a, you know, syndicated show, and I don't think it set everybody up for life, to say the least.
Yeah.
And I think it's going to be interesting to see how this show being successful, which I think it will be, kind of reignites interest in the actual 80s history of ladies wrestling. There are also, I want to point out, there are also a lot of really interesting directors on some of these episodes.
Yeah.
Lynn Shelton directed one. Melanie Mayron, who was on 30-something long ago and has done a bunch of directing since then, did one. So there's also a really interesting, you know, crop of directors who worked on it.
I also got to point out the music and the costuming and the makeup, they do work. They do work on this show.
I do feel like I've had a lot of the 80s pop music kind of business and the period pop music as an element of shows in the last few years. And I don't know whether it still charms me as much as it originally did.
It also feels a little more early 80s than late 80s to me.
That's true. I wouldn't know those dates as well as perhaps you do, but I hear you.
And I don't really know any of these.
I was just going to say, this is all.
Cat wasn't
this is all
I was like, I like the sneakers Allison Brie's wearing. I think they're coming back.
Yeah, well, a lot of that is real. I mean, a lot of that, I can tell you, is sadly real fashion. And apparently Allison Brie got a real perm. That's what I heard. Which is, I mean, that's sacrifice.
Right? That's method right there.
Yeah, that is sacrifice. That is method. Well, as you get a chance to see GLOW, come and find us on Facebook at facebook.com/PCHH or tweet us at PCHH and let us know what you think. And that brings us to the end of our show. You can find Kat Chow on Twitter at Kat Chow. You can find our producer, Jessica Reedy, at Jessica_Reedy, and our producer emeritus and music director, Mike Katziff, at Mike Katziff. Mike's band, Hello Come In, does our theme music. And thanks this week to Chris Benderev for production assistance. We'll see you right back here on Friday.
It has already been an eventful summer in politics.
Yeah, between the 2020 debates and the president's battle over immigration, there's a lot going on.
And when there's news you need to know about, the NPR Politics podcast is there to tell you what happened.
Not to mention, we're hitting the road so you can meet all of the 2020 contenders.
Oh, NPR is going to drive me completely crazy.
The NPR Politics podcast.
Subscribe!